Good morning, everyone. So today, we're going to think a little bit about what is man, which is a deep question. I don't have a good answer, but I have some references. And to do that, I want to reflect on a passage that appears in this volume called The Emergence of Ethical Man. The Emergence of Ethical Man is a collection of manuscripts that were unpublished in his lifetime, published posthumously, talks given by Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. And there seems to be no end, and this is not the newest one, but I have only been reading it lately, there is just no end to the greatness and the breadth of the reach of Rav Soloveitchik. It is just absolutely, it's defying logic in any way. So Rav Soloveitchik here discusses man and a basic question about man. And what he discusses here is two different views of man as man relates to nature. Now, I don't know anything about Christianity, so I can't speak intelligently about this topic, but he knew everything about everything, so he actually knows something about Christianity, and he will tell us, and that's on the green sheets, that there is a difference between the Jewish and Christian views of man regarding the problem of man's autonomy or heteronomy, meaning, is man a part of nature, or is it apart from nature? And this is at the heart. There's more packets and green sheets over here. So he starts off talking about the periods, the psukim in Tanakh, about man is like a breath, flesh is like grass. Psukim in Koheles, Yeshayahu. And now Chazal viewed the naturalness of man based on the psukim in Tanakh. Bote, shochne bote chomer. However, he says that Christians, and this is on the other side in page 8 and 9, I gave you this page, you can look at it more in depth later. He says, Christians, the New Testament, drawing on the idea of individual chait, which found its full formulation in Yechezkel, shifted man to a different plane and portrayed him in a different light. Man is not any longer the pendulum that swings between birth and decay, but the being who is torn by satanic revolt, sin, and obedience between living and falling from his godfather, etc. Both sin and submission are traits related to man as a spiritual, transcendental being. Top of the next column. Page 9 on the bottom, if you're keeping track. It's the little number 9 at the bottom of the page. Top of the page says, man as part of nature. On the green, oh, you got cut off. Okay, so it says on the top of the page, man as part of nature. On the top right above where it says the story in Genesis 1. Above the story in Genesis 1, go to the top of the page, 5 lines in. Okay. Story of Genesis 1, go up to the top of the page, 5 lines down. In view of all that, the New Testament stresses man's alien status in the world of nature and his radical uniqueness. To be sure, all of these ideas are not only Christian, but Jewish as well. Christianity did not add much to the biblical philosophical anthropology. We come across a dual concept of man in the Bible. His element of transcendence was well known to the biblical Jew. Yet transcendence was always seen against the backdrop of naturalness. The canvas was man's immanence. Immanence with an A means a part of, being present in. Transcendence was just projected on it as a display of colors. Beautiful image. It was more of a modifying than a basic attribute of man. So why are we talking about this today? Because, what's that?
I did not.
Well, yeah, we'll develop this a little more as we go along. So, we'll get back to this in a minute. Over the course of the morning, we'll unpack this. The reason why we're talking about this today, because we are studying the Rambam, or at least the Rambam is our canvas, is our backdrop for our discussions this year, although it's hard to believe it's already June, and we're going to start planning for our Sunday morning year-end celebration breakfast.
When?
You'll find out. So, this question, this issue that Rav Soloveitchik is setting out for us, which we'll explain in a minute a little further, really, I think, sets the stage, the nafgamina, the practical application of this, could be understood in the context of the next section of the Rambam, which we are learning, which is the Rambam section of Hilchos Shofar, which appears on the front page of your white packet. The Rambam begins the first halacha right out of the gate, Mitzvah Saseh Shel Torah. It is a positive commandment of the Torah, Lishmoa Truas HaShofar Barash Hashanah, to hear the sound of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, Shenemar Yom Trua Yelachem. And the shofar, Shetokim Bo Bein Barash Hashanah Bein Shel Yovel Hukeren HaKvasim HaKafof. The shofar that we use is the horn of an animal. It's the horn, in this case, the keren of the kvasim, the sheep, which is curled. The Gemara has a lengthy discussion about the difference between curled horns versus straight horns. V'kol ha-shofaros psulin chutz mikeren hakeves. Everything else is disqualified. V'af al pishol nisparish b'torah trua b'shofar. Even though it doesn't say in the Torah that you use the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, because it just says Yom Trua or Zichron Trua, remembering the Trua. Nonetheless, Hareu Omer B'Yovel V'Havarta Trua Ta'aviru Shofar U'Mipi Hashmua Lomdu Ma Trua Siyovel B'Shofar Av Truas Rosh Hashanah B'Shofar. So just like on Yovel, you blow the shofar, so too on Rosh Hashanah you blow the shofar. So you might be thinking, what does the green sheet of Rav Soloveitchik have anything to do with the shofar? So that'll be the goal. If we succeed here, we will figure out why I thought to put these two things together. And if we did not, hopefully we'll learn something anyway. But let's go back to what... Let's put this on the back burner to see eventually how it's going to fit in. But Rav Soloveitchik was telling us is, imagine, let's say you have a canvas, a wall. So let's say you buy today, it's actually not so expensive, you can buy a very inexpensive projector. It used to be to buy a projector was like thousands of dollars. Now you can buy an inexpensive, not fancy projector for $100 or $150, and you can project something on the wall, which is actually, I'm just saying, if you happen to have somebody who would use this, it's a great Hanukkah present. We received this as a Hanukkah present, so it's very fun to sit with the kids in the living room and you can project something on the wall from the computer. It's really fun. But what does that mean? It means that you have a backdrop, the background of your wall, and you are superimposing something else, another image on top of that. So if the backdrop of our living room wall is like off-white kind of, so then whatever color that's being put on it, from an artistic point, if you're really being medactic, so then it wouldn't be like the exact right color if we're watching a video of the kids or something, so you wouldn't see everybody's face with the exact color. Like if you asked an artist, they would say, well, it's a little, it has a shade of off-white in it because the backdrop, the base, is off-white. It's not actual white. And the same thing, sometimes they do this. You go to an event or something and they have a photo shoot, a photo booth. So they have a picture, I don't know if base, in the back there's the Eiffel Tower. And then you superimpose something, or the opposite. You get actually the Eiffel Tower, you take a picture of the Eiffel Tower, and you send it to your local photographer who will superimpose your picture on the Eiffel Tower. But the idea that Rav Soloveitchik is trying to explain to us is that in his view, in the Jewish view, according to his understanding, man is, I would say, most fundamentally part of the natural world. That's where it comes from. That's the baseline. On top of that is the spiritual dimension. So the question is, where did he get this from? So he develops it based on, and I didn't finish the whole book, and maybe this is not exactly the way that he would say it, although he's certainly... This is the basis of a lot of the things that he's saying. He says, you have to look back at the story of Bereshis. Let's go to turn the page to what I call it here, section 1. In Bereshis, Perek Aleph. So the Ribono Shel Olam gives us a description of Maisa Bereshis. Now, this is a big problem, this description of Maisa Bereshis, because as Rav Kook writes in a letter, he gave us a secret shrouded within another secret. You know, anybody who takes the story of Maaseh Bereishis at face value is missing out on the limitless worlds that are beneath this story that we'll never really fully grasp until you're in the Olam HaEmes. It's mamish. This is the deepest of the deepest of the deep. And yet, the Rabbeinu Shlomo gave it to us like this because he wants us to learn something from it. Otherwise, he wouldn't have told us to us like this at all, or he wouldn't have told us anything at all. So the fact that he wrote out the creation story as he did must be we're supposed to learn something from it. We must be supposed to study it and understand it. That's different than saying, well, what came before? Ma'ala fanim, ma'ala achor, ma'ala ma'ala, ma'ala matas. You're supposed to look at this. You're supposed to understand it. So I think on the one hand, you need to know what you don't know, but also we need to try to understand it. So God created the world, Bereishis Bara Elokim. He started the world on the first day, then he went through 6 days, and then we got to Shabbos. So when he gets to the 6 days, sixth day, he says, this is in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Chaf Dalet, on the top, what's going to be created on the sixth day, what we like to call Friday? Vayomer Elokim, Totse Haaretz Nefesh Chaya Lemina, Behema Voremes V'chayso Eretz Lemina, Vayihichen. Let's bring forth the animal kingdom, the creatures of the earth. He already created the birds previously. Now we're getting the animals. And so, Pasuk 25, Chaf Hei, and he does that. Vayasa lokim eschaya sa'aretz lemina, vesa behema lemina, veskol remesu adama lemineu, vayara lokim kitov. And now what does the Rabbeinu Shalom do? Vayomer lokim, nasa adam betzalmenu kidmusenu. Vyirdu vidgas hayam v'ov hashemayim, uva behema v'chol ha'aretz, v'chol ha'remes ha'romesu alo aretz. And Hashem said, God said, in this case Elohim said, as we'll see that's going to be significant, let us make man in our image, in our form. And what's going to be man's job? To rule over what? The fish in the sea, the birds, and the creatures on land. Meaning, what is he being created vis-a-vis? The other animals. Notice this. It's not saying that man is categorically or qualitatively different than the animals. It's just saying, well, the animals are here and you're bigger. You're going to be their master. But it's you and them. On the sixth day, we have the behemoths and the bnei adam. We have the animals and you have the people. And the people are created within the frame. It says, peru review, be fruitful and multiply, and you're going to be the top of the food chain, so to speak. So far, that's what we've got. And what are you going to eat? Pasuk 29. Don't think you're going to eat them. Do not eat them. You know what you can eat? Grass. You can have anything, the vegetation that grows, anything that's on the lower level of the food chain. We have domeim, tzomeach, chai, medaber. We have things that are inanimate, like rocks or sticks. That's the bottom level of creation. Then you have tzomeach, things that grow, the flora, then you have the animals, and then you have the speakers, which we'll get to in a little bit. So the Rabbeinu Shlomo is, at first, when we're first created, we can't eat the animals. Why shouldn't we be able to eat the animals? Yeah, because we are an animal.
They have a soul.
That's a good question. We're going to get to that in a little bit, in the Tanya. So they do have some level of a soul, but so we'll get to that. So yeah, we'll get to that in the Baal Tanya in a little bit. But right now, why you can't eat an animal? How could you eat an animal? Just because you're the top of the food chain doesn't mean that you can eat the other animals. And then,
other animals eat animals.
But it's interesting. In Pasuk 30, Ulechol chayas aret lechol of hashemayim lechol romis ala aret ashebo nefesh chayas kol yerek esev la'achla. In theory, what did the Rabbeinu Shalom give the other animals to eat?
The plants.
The plants. It's interesting. Happens to be that the animals eat other animals, but you know, I never noticed that until this. I saw it in the Rav Soloveitchik Sefer that he points out about, and the truth is, this is a known idea. I think Rav Cook discusses this, although the way Rav Soloveitchik frames it is different than the way that I heard the name of Rav Cook. The whole question about vegetarianism, is that a spiritual idea? Is that because people are different than, from a spiritual soul standpoint, or is it from a natural standpoint? So that may be the nuanced difference here. But anyway,
Alex,
yeah.
So it says R in the top. It says make him an R image. So he's talking about Malach and Tzur.
So that's the way Chazal understand it.
Why the differentiation
between meaning differentiating between who and whom.
So it's...
I mean, why did Chazal introduce the Malachim at this stage in the process? Yeah, so Rashi answers that question for other reasons. He says, look, the Malachim and the people are very similar to each other. Not really, but on some level, whatever this means on a spiritual level, we're similar to them. And they were going to be upset if we would have been created without consulting them. So the Rebbeinu Shlomo consulted them so that he wouldn't have them be upset. Now, that whole story is just, we'll take a 10-second radio station pause to address that question, which is, nobody should ever misunderstand that statement of Chazal to be understood at face value. Obviously, the Rebbeinu Shlomo doesn't consult. It's not like there's him and somebody else and the angels. What is Rashi trying to tell you? The Rebbeinu Shlomo is modeling for us how you're supposed to live your life. We can go through life, and depending on where we are in our stage and what our, you know, whether it's a business decision or a family decision or an interpersonal decision, we can make a lot of decisions. And we can make those decisions unilaterally and give them down as edicts from, like God, from on high. But the Rebbeinu Shlomo wants us to understand that if you want to create an environment, there's another way to do it. You can be more collaborative. So that's, I think, Chazal trying to tell us a lesson there. That's the purpose of that na'aseh. That one nun is trying to give you that lesson about leadership. That's the way, at least, I understand that Rashi. But I think it fits into the general story. So now what happens? We conclude, Vayar Elokim in 31, Laman Aleph, Vayar Elokim Eskol Asher Asav, Hinei Tov Ma'od, Gevaldik. And it was the end of the sixth day. Great. So what do we have? Do we start? Vayichulu. And this is Shabbos. This is the end of creation. So far, so good. So if we would have stopped here, we would have said, perfect. God created man, didn't he? Yes, he did. But we go on. We continue in Perek Beis. And guess what? We create man again. If you didn't get it the first time, here we go again. Eila told us Hashemayim v'aretz b'hi bar'am b'yom asos Hashem Elokim eretz v'shamayim. This is the story, turning the page to section 2. Here we are in Perek Beis of Bereishis, where we get the story of Adam again. But this time, it's not Elokim, it's Hashem Elokim. Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey is now introduced. We've never seen that name of Hashem before. God's name has always been Elokim in the first description of creation. Now we have a new description, now Hashem Elokim. And V'cholsiach asod eterem yeh ba'aretz, V'choleisav asod eterem yitzmach, ki lo'im tir Hashem Elokim al ha'aretz, V'odam ayin lavad aso adama. Nothing would grow, because there was no rain and there was no man to work the land. Interesting. I didn't know that man needed to work the land. Okay. So what did they have? They had steam. Aid, we call aid today's edema steam, but in that meant that some kind of mist would come up from the earth and water the earth. Now, Pasuk 7 in the bold, in the highlight. Vayitzer Hashem Elokim es ha'adam afar min ha'adama. Hashem Elokim tigizunt created the man afar, earth, from the ground. Vayipach ba'apov nishmas chayim. And he blew into his nostrils a living soul. Vayihi ha'adam lenefesh chaya. And the person was for a living being. So here we are. Adam Arishon is created again. But now he's created separate from the original creation story, not part of the 7 days of creation, the six or seven, right? The 6 days of creation, that's over. This is a new story. So the question is why?
But maybe it's not a new creation. Maybe he's just repeating the same creation.
Ah, yes, he definitely is.
But
okay.
Different worlds.
That's right. So my question is, why would he do that?
To emphasize something.
Yes. Not only to emphasize something, to introduce us to something that we didn't have before. Before we had, God created them, I'm going back, flipping back to page 1, Zachar unakeva bara osam. He created them, Zachar unakeva, male and female. We don't have that now. Now we have nefesh chaya, a living being. So it's telling the same action, the same story, the creation of Adam, from two different vantage points, not just to emphasize two things, but to educate us about two different parts of the human being. Now, we could take this in one direction, which has to do with Rav Soloveitchik's description of Adam 1 and Adam 2, which is not for today, but that's a worthy pursuit in and of itself. But I want to focus on a different aspect today. So what does Hashem do now? Vayita Hashem Elokim gan be'eden mikeden vayosem sham es ha'adam asher yatsar. God created the Garden of Eden, and he puts man there, and he puts a lot of trees in there. Vayatzmach, Hashem Elokim in ha'adam akol eitz nechmad lamar v'tov l'machol, tons of trees. Ve'etz ha'chayim b'soch ha'gan ve'etz ha'das tov ha'ra. That's Pasuk 9. And then 10 through 14, they give you the geography, which is, this is like super deep Kabbalah. I have no idea what it means. It's the names of the four rivers and the exact location of Gan Eden. This is very, very deep. Now, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do in Pasuk Tesvav 15? Vayikach Hashem Elokim es ha'adam. Again, we're still with Hashem Elokim. He takes Adam. Vayanicheu b'Gan Eden. He puts him in Gan Eden. Le'ovda u'le'shomra. To work it exactly and to guard it. So wait a second. When Adam was created in chapter 1, did he have a job? Did he have a calling? Did he have a mission? No.
Yeah.
What was it?
Pru and Ovu.
Right, but is that any different than any other species? No, all species are meant to be Pru Revu.
But he said, and master it, master the
food. Uridu vidgas hayom v'olashamayim. Exactly. All you are responsible to do is to be the leader of the beasts.
So that's the difference between the two pages.
Okay. So far that's one of a couple of differences, right? In the first case, he's one of the animals and he's told you're to be the leader of the animals. In another case, he's told this is a garden. There's a big difference between the most powerful, the leader of the animals, versus a human being in a garden. And the quality, think about the quality of that mission. Le'ovda, to work it. And L'shamra, to guard it, to cultivate it, to protect it. So now, it goes even further. You could say, until now, they're not really categorically different. One was just to be the leader, Uridu. By the way, one could ask the question whether that Uridu is prescriptive or just descriptive, but okay. Leave that alone, because you could say the same thing about La'ovda or L'shamra. But now, you cannot get out of this one. This is going to put you... You're going to have to deal with this. Shoshana, you can't get away from this. Vayitzav Hashem Elokim Esa Adam. Now, we receive a commandment. Now, this is the first time that the Ribbono Shel Olam, he addresses us. He calls us to a command. La'ovda u'l'shamra now takes on a whole new level because it's mikol eitz hagana chol tochel. Now we have an instruction. And u'me'eitz hadas tovar alo socha mimenu. And then, in addition to this, which we're not going to talk about today, but Rav Soloveitchik deals with it, of course, on the last section, so now we introduce a partner, a life partner for Adam HaRishon. Because until now, we had just Zachar and Nekeva, males and females. So you go to the Brookfield Zoo, you see males and females. But you go to a restaurant, and you don't see Zachar and Nekeva, you see a man and a woman having dinner. That's not the same thing you see in Lincoln Park Zoo. Yeah, Barbara.
Well, this section is so much different because just from Pasuk Vav, Pasuk Zayin, where it says, Ve'ibach Vav Nishmat Chaim.
Okay.
The Nishama is the whole difference here.
Perfect. So one of the key differences is the Nishama, exactly. And where does that come from? Maybe what's already the indication of that? So first of all, as you're pointing out, the Nishama is introduced here, and we noticed before it's in the context of a new name of Hashem. The name of Hayahu Ve'Viyeh, the transcendent name of the Borei Olam, that God was, is, and will always be. And you could even say, so I want to pick up on your point, but begin it with the beginning part of the pasuk. Turn to the next page. Look at this. The reason I bolded that pasuk, because you could argue what you're saying, Barbara, that pasuk is the linchpin. That's the crux of it. The pasuk started, Vayitzer Hashem Elokim. So look at it carefully. Vayitzer could have been spelled Vav Yud Tzadi Reish. And it's spoke beautiful, by the way. A tzayar. What is a tzayar in Hebrew? Yes, the tzayar is an artist. A tzayar is an artist. So the Ribbono Shalom, we say, Ein Tzur Kelokeinu, there is no rock like our God, Ein Tzayar, there was no artist like the Ribbono Shalom. The Ribbono Shalom views human beings as a work of art. That itself is amazing. We are a work of art. Every person that you meet, every child that you see, every older person, every person is a work of art. Ein Tzayar Kelokeinu. Anyway, he spells it, though, in the Chumash, the Ribbono Shel Olam, with two yuds. Two yuds. So the question is, why two yuds? It could have been one yud. So, if you look here, the Bereishis Rabbah, Vayitzer, Shnei Yitzarim, Yetzer Tov, V'Yetzer Hara. We have a Yetzer Tov and a Yetzer Hara. Two different parts of our personality. And look what the Medrash says. She'ilu haya lebehema shnei yitzarim. If an animal had two yitzarim, kevan shayisa roa sakin biyad adam l'shochta haisa mefachedes umesa. If a behema had a yitzar tov and a yitzar hara, when it saw a shochet with a knife, it would die of fright. Interesting.
Is that why it's Hashem Elokim?
Yes. Yes, because the Hashem is the Shem Havai. That's the spiritual transcendental quality. So now we're introducing this dimension, which you can see now is multi-dimensional here. It's all over Pasuk Beis. It's a different kind of a person, a different kind of a Bria. A person is now distinct from the animals. Animals don't have, and that's why I thought this Medrash is so important for us, because I don't know if Rav Soloveitchik quoted this Medrash, but the contrast here is between people and animals. Animals don't have Shnei Yitzarim. People have Shnei Yitzarim. Rashi quotes another. Shnei Yitziros, Yitzira La'olam Hazeh, and Yitzira L'tchias HaMesim. Aval, I got a little messed up on the words here. Aval bebehema she'ena omedes ledin lo nichtav biyitziras shnei yudin. A behema doesn't have tchias hamesim. It has a life force, but it doesn't have tchias hamesim. Doesn't have resurrection. At the end of time, all the neshamas are all going to come back. Animals, even though they have some life force, they don't have tchias hamesim. So Rashi says now in this pasuk, vayitzer Hashem Elokim. It's different than the animals. This new Yetzirah, this new Adam, has Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. It has this life, and then it has the life when it's resurrected in Tchias HaMesim, unlike the behemoths. So what are we trying to say? We're trying to demonstrate, clearly Rashi and the Medrash are trying to tell us, that this new being is not like the animals. It's totally different. And now, to Barbara's point in the Unkelus, this is very powerful. So Hashem created Adam Afar Min Admasa. Unkelus is written in Aramaic. Unefach ba'apoi nishmasa dechayei. He blew in his nostrils a nishama, a nishmas, a soul of life. Vahavas ba'adam, and it was in the man, l'ruach memalala, a speaking spirit. Ruach, we know, that's a spirit. Memalel is Aramaic for speech. It's actually related to the Hebrew. Mi yemalel gvuros Hashem yashmiah kol tivaso. So there's a lot of overlap in Aramaic and Hebrew. So memalela, you'll find this sometimes in the davening. What does humankind have? It doesn't have just aboriginal communication, like basic communication, has a speaking spirit. It's lamalel. It's a medaber. A person is a speaker. That speech separates it from, distinguishes it from, the animals. And more than that, on a more fundamental idea, that this is, it's blown into us. So take a look in the Tanya. The Baal HaTanya writes, "V'nefesh Hashenis b'Yisrael," in number 4, "Hichelek Eloka mimal mamish." Our soul, the Jewish soul, is literally a spark of godliness. Kamo shekosev vayipach ba'apa of nishmas chayim. And we say it in davening in the morning every day. Ata nefachta bi. You blew it into me. Each one of us has that neshama blown into us. Ukamo shekosev b'zohar. This is the powerful line that the Baal HaTanya adds for us. He quotes a Zohar. He says, man denafach. Somebody who is nafach. If you blow, mi toche nafach, blows from his toch, from his insides. So kivyachol, when God blew into us, he blew himself into us. Pirush, mi toche yuso, umi pnimi yuso, from the essence of God himself, whatever that, I don't know what that means, but whatever that means, we have that, each one of us sitting here right now has it blown into us. Shetochius upnimius hachius sheba adam motzi benefichaso bekoach. You take your life force and you blow it out. That's expressed, you know, in a physical way when people talk about mouth to mouth resuscitation. When you imagine the story of Elisha and the boy who, Rahman al-Islam, who had expired, and Elisha was Mechaim, he put, Piv al-Piv, ve'enav al-enav. Man denafach, midilei nafach. So kivyachol derbon sholom. When each one of us was born, when we existed as a neshama, when that neshama was put into this embryo, that was mitoch yuso. And that doesn't exist in animals. So number one, we have the two yitzarim, the vayitzer that sets us apart. And then we have the neficha, the nishmas chayim, that sets us apart. So with all of this in mind, we can appreciate what Rav Soloveitchik is telling us. That on the one hand, we definitely are Perek Aleph. We are part of the story of creation. We are animals like every other animal. And that's who we are. And in Rav Soloveitchik's view, that's the first most definitional aspect of our person, of what we are. We're at the basic level, at our core, we're a zachar and a keva. We're a biological creation, just like all the biological creations, even, by the way, including the flora. It's interesting. It's a statement, it's a good drush, but we're going to say in the Sefer Devarim, ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh. A person's like a tree. A person is a tree, literally a tree of the field. So we're part of the natural world. But on the other hand, we are unquestionably distinct from the natural world. We are something else. We're living in an existence of Hashem Elokim, of Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey. That's the transcendent quality of the Rabbono Shalom that relates to our neshamas. So it's not one or the other. It's both. So now, if we appreciate this, we can understand what our mission is. You know, thinking about how we oscillate between the physical and the spiritual helps us navigate our life. Because it means we're going to eat breakfast like, I don't know, all the apes in the Regenstein Center for African Apes in the Lincoln Park Zoo. They all eat breakfast. I hope they give them a good breakfast. They eat breakfast and we eat breakfast. But in addition to that component of eating breakfast, like all the chayas and all the behemoths, we have an additional component. We have, like we say, yolichenu komamius liartzeno. There's two komos. There's the level number one, and then there's the second level in the elevator. There's the second koma. That's the Hashem Elokim. So this is part of a mission that we have. You could look at the same mission, kind of take yourself out of it, and realize that the first way of looking at it is looking at us in the natural world. And the second way of looking at us is more in the spiritual context. The nafach, the spiritual capacity of speech, that's what creates society. That's the neshama component. When you make people, right, we always say this, that this was one of the dumbest things. I don't know whoever created this, but it was the dumbest thing they ever created. Right? When they say sticks and stones might break my bones, but names will never hurt me, the dumbest thing they ever said. Never, never believe that. No matter who tells it to you. It's the dumbest thing ever. Because sticks and stones, they only hurt creation number one. Animals also break their bones, and their bones all made us as amazing things. We heal. But names, where's names hurting? Names hurts in Perek Beis, the neshama, the Hashem Elokim. Because that's the olam of the ruach. That's why words in the Jewish tradition are so powerful, because it comes from the ruach mamalala. That's why it's called hafla'a. The Rambam, when he talks about oaths, puts it in a book called hafla'a, wonderment. Because when you speak, you create. You create not in a physical sense, but in a spiritual sense, in the world of Hashem Elokim. Well, now I can understand something else. In the world of Elokim, in the world of nature, can you really use speech in a spiritual way, or does it not translate? Let's say you have a big fish, and you have a little fish. Can the little fish sit down with the big fish and discuss the meaning of its existence and why it's important that it has a family and it has, children and it has a mission in life and all these important things when it meets the big fish in the ocean? It doesn't work like that. In the ocean, the big fish eat the little fish, and that's it.
Yeah, but not the mammals.
What's that?
Not the mammals.
So meaning?
I just saw something this week that whales have the most intense language.
Yeah, so I'm not sure that we would consider that. I guess this is one thing that's been discussed. I'm not sure that communication is the same as language. But what I'm talking more about is maybe you could call it compassion or rahmanas or a human dimension. There definitely is rahmanas among animals. Let's say the way that a chick hangs around with the mother and the mother protects it, that's innate. But the concept of rachamim and compassion and a mission, that's lacking. In nature, the big fish eat the small fish, and that's it. There is no forgiveness. That's another example. Forgiveness is a human quality. It's a divine quality. It's part of the second chapter. It's Hashem Elokim. That's the concept of tshuva. That doesn't exist in animals.
I know that you're right.
Yes.
But elephants more. When an elephant dies, they'll sit for 2 days or so.
Right, so it doesn't mean that... Right, so it doesn't mean that the animals don't have feelings. But Rav Soloveitchik distinguishes between pain and suffering in a different essay. And he says that animals feel pain, but they don't have suffering. Suffering is a uniquely human condition. Pain exists in animals. Interesting distinction. I think he would probably argue that that's painful, that loss. But it's an interesting question. I certainly don't have all the answers. I don't know if I have enough knowledge about that to address it. But now, I'd like to bring it back. And take a look at this Medrash in Vayikra Rabbah number 5. Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Nachman Pasach, he wanted to talk about this Pasach. Olo Elokim b'Srua Hashem b'Kol Shofar. This pasuk could give you chills, because you know what it reminds you of. That at some point in the not too distant future, we are all going to stand before the Lord on Rosh Hashanah. So that can strike more fear in the hearts of man, even than when you say Pesach is coming. Rosh Hashanah is coming.
It depends. And before, if you are a woman, and
so before we do tkiyas, many of us have the minig. I don't know if everybody does. We have the minig. They say this pasuk out loud. Olo Elokim b'srua Hashem b'kol shofar. Elokim goes up with the trua, Hashem b'kol shofar. B'shosh HaKadosh Baruch Hu yoshev va'ole al kisei din. At the time that God is sitting and going up on the throne of judgment, badin hu ole, he goes on judgment. That's where it starts. Ma'atam, what's the reason? Allah Elokim Bisrua. God starts with the name Elokim. What is the name Elokim? Says the Medrash, Elokim is associated with Din, judgment, strictness. U'bishah sheYisrael notlin es shofran v'tokin lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when we, the Jewish people, take the shofar and we blow before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what happens? Omed mikisei hadin v'yoshev b'kisei rachmim. He stands up from the throne of judgment and he moves to the throne of mercy. Dichsiv Hashem b'kol shofar. Yud and hey and vav hey, that's the name of God that represents compassion, rachmanis, second chances, tshuva. U'mismale aleim rachmim, he has compassion on us, thankfully. U'mirachim aleim, and he pities us. V'hofech aleim midas hadim l'rachmim. And when is that? That's on Rosh Hashanah. Achshav ani mivi. Now I get it. The Ribbono Shel Olam created the world, Bereishis bara Elokim. Adam HaRishon was first created in the realm of Elokim, in the realm of Din, in the realm of the natural world. That's where we are, and that's where we're going to start, and ultimately that's where we're going to end up. Because if we didn't have the basic accountability of Din, so then the world could not exist. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants, in the Ritzon HaElyon, that there has to be some level of din. Says the Rosh Hashiva Zatzal, Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldwich, he says that's why when the Malachim said, it's not fair to Rabbi Akiva, the Ribbono Shel Olam said, be quiet, or I'm going to take the world and turn it to tohu vavohu, I'm going to turn it away. Because there is one man, Rabbi Akiva, he can withstand divine scrutiny, he can hold up to din. The rest of us, we're going to get rachmanis. But there has to be a level of din. Ultimately, we are created within the realm of din. We are natural beings. And in din, there are no second chances. Din is din. The big fish eat the small fish, and that's it. You can't plead your case. You can't say, I want another chance. You can't get forgiveness. The big fish eat the small fish, and that's it. That's Elokim. That's din. That's what the Medrash says. But then there's another Bria. There's another dimension to us that we're always oscillating between. And that is Hashem Elokim. Vayitzer Hashem Elokim. Bereishis was Elokim, but now it's B'yom Asos Hashem Elokim. It's a new creation. It's the spiritual dimension. That new spiritual dimension comes with Vayipach Ba'apav Nishmas Chaim. He blew into us. He blew into us a living spirit. That was the Yud, the double Yud. We now have an extra Neshama. That neshama, well, neshama comes from the Kisei HaKavod. That comes before creation. You know what else was created before creation? Tshuva. Second chances. Love. Relationships. Society. You know, Adam and Chava, not just Zachar and Nekeva. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says, you know, I know that you guys come from the animal kingdom. You're driven by animalistic drives, and you should be subject to the world of din. Allah Elokim Besrua. Trua, the word trua means from the word ra, fragmented, broken. Din is broken, it's harsh. But now we're going to move. We're going to go to Hashem Bekol Shofar, to the Tkia, to the majestic blast, to the blast we read about yesterday that's bringing people together. What is that avoda? What's that mitzvah? What's the mitzvah we're talking about?
Shofar.
The shofar. So it does not surprise you then that the mitzvah of shofar is the mitzvah of what? Of blowing. Of the breath. Man denofach midilei nofach. We go back to the original vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim. We are invoking, we're telling the Ribbono Shel Olam, look, we can't stand here before you if we're just in the world of Elokim, if it's just Zachar and Nekeva. Remember the breath. Our breath is your breath, kiviyachol. Our soul is your soul. Please give us another chance. And when we acknowledge that, when we call ourselves to being spiritual beings, to coming back to that mission of lo'avda u'lishamra, of to being mitzuvim, of Vayitzav Hashem Elokim, Then the Baal Shem says, okay, you know what? I'm going to treat you in the new way. I'm going to treat you in the way of Rachmanis. So beautiful. We are telling each other, when we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, we're saying, let's go back, Zeh Hayom Tchilas Masecha, let's go back to when we were created and remind ourselves what our job is, which is to be spiritual. To be spiritual within the context of being physical. This instrument reminds us of that. And therefore, I should have put it on the page, the Rambam, not actually in Hilchos Shofar, but in Hilchos Tshuva, tells us, you know why you blow the shofar? It's a wake-up call. What's it a wake-up call for? It's a wake-up call for the original Vayipach Pa'apav. Don't forget, guys, we're put here La'avda on the Shamra. We're here put here to have two Yetzers, a Yetzer that's going to come back in the next world. Live a life that's infused with the recognition of two Yitzarim, of the Vayipach Ba'ap, of the breath that we get every day. So we say in the morning, every day, Ata Nefach Tabi, said the Baal HaTanya. We're reliving it. This is the reminder. It's a reminder, the avoda of the shofar is a reminder of our spirituality. That's what's going from Elohim to Hashem. That's going from the first creation story to the second. I found this beautiful poem by Emily Dickinson on the bottom of the last page. This world is not conclusion. It's only the first stanza of the poem. A sequel stands beyond, invisible as music, but positive as sound. It's the sound of the shofar that reminds us that there is another Yetzer. There is another world. There is an intangible quality here. There is a neshama that will exist lenetzach nitzachim, just like the source of that neshama. It's the shnei yitzarim. It's positive as sound. It's not a conclusion. Because animals, like Rashi said, animals live in this earth and then they die and that's it. But the sound, the shofar, is not a conclusion, and that's something that we have every day when we say Ata Nefach Tabi. But I think we could take it one step further. The last few minutes that we have. So far, we have developed this idea of Rav Soloveitchik, that man is both part of the natural world and then apart from it, separate from it, distinct from it. There is the natural component of us and there is the spiritual component. There is the aspect that's in Din and there is in Rachmim. And so we are focusing in our lives of bringing the Hashem into it, of tapping into that. The avod of the shofar to remind us that we have this calling, this spiritual special spirit. So the shofar, as you could call it, if you want to summarize it, the instrument of spirituality. It's just breath. So now I can understand why, something else, there's such a strong connection between the shofar and davening. Because you might say that the highest expression of spirituality is tefillah, which is part of the reason that tefillah is so difficult. It's so elusive for us. Because to get into that frame of Hashem Elokim, of being spiritual beings and davening, is a really tough thing to do. Because the more that we are enmeshed in this world, in the first description of Adam Rishon, in the Zachar and the Keva, it's harder to reach beyond, to touch the Yud Kei Vav Kei, the spiritual transcendent quality. It's interesting that Rashi says that Adam Ayin Lavod Eso Adama, there was no man to work the ground. What does it mean there was no man to work the ground? Rashi says, he quotes from Chazal, that means there was no man to daven. In the beginning of Bava Kamma, it's a strange thing. The Bava Kamma, they tell you there are four categories of Nezikin. Shor, Bor, Mave, and Hever. Mave. Anybody, no one knows, what is Mave? What kind of word is that? Mave. Mem, Bez, Ayin, Hey. Mave. I don't know what that means. The Gemara says, I don't know. So let me give you two choices. One of them is Adam Hamazik, a person. Why is Adam Hamazik, a person called a Maveh, from the word Boi? Oh, you know why? Because a person davens. Boi means to need, to want, to ask. So we are, Tiskabel, you say in Kaddish, slow son, our prayer, Uba'u son, the Boi. Hashem, please accept our davening, our prayers. So the Gemara says in Baba Kamma, you don't want to know what a person really is. A person is really a davener. Deep down, that's our spiritual makeup. And as we understand now, it fits perfectly. Because deep down, what makes us human is what connects us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's that spiritual spark. It's our spirituality. It's our davening. Otherwise, we'd just be humans as animals. So now, we understand why shofar and davening have so much to do with each other. In my shul growing up, in our shtibel, we had tkiyos in the shtila shmon esrei, in the silent shmon esrei. That meant that when you were davening, at a certain point, the chazan would blow the shofar in the silent shmon esrei. Apparently, Rav Soloveitchik did this in Boston, other places. I know in Shtiblach they do this. In the shuls here, where we daven, the regular Ashkenaz shuls, they only blow the tkiyos during the chazaras hashatz, which is al seder habrachos. That's the way it's supposed to be. Those are called tkiyos de me'umad. That's the ideal tkiyos. They're part of the Shmona Esrei. But in our shul growing up, it wasn't just part of the chazan Shmona Esrei. It was part of your personal Shmona Esrei. You had tkiyos al seder habrachos when you davened just by yourself. And you listened in. Sometimes you were a little out of sync. Apparently, someone told me that in Boston, Rav Soloveitchik would daven a little bit more than his regular quiet whisper so that the people could hear where he was up to, and the person who was going to blow the shofar would blow, and everybody would be at the same point in the silent Shmon Esrei. Because the tkiyas go al seder habrachos.
And what happened in Gezeras HaShatz? Also,
yes. But that's why you don't have as many at the end in Sfard. If you look in a Sfard Machzor, at the Ashkenaz Machzor, when they finish the tkiyos at the end, they blow a whole nother set. But in the Sfar, they don't do that because they already did that in the Shtilish Monesre. They tell you in some of the Machzorim. So Rav Soloveitchik has the Machzor. They collected his teachings. And in the introduction of it, they have a few essays about Rosh Hashanah and the shofar. And here, which we're not going to have time for developing today, although it's probably a good idea to do this before Yom Tov, I give you one little passage. The integral relationship, here on the bottom, on the right, the integral relationship between prayer and shofar suggests that the highly subjective and emotional prayer experience described as avoda shebelev, worship of the heart, must be paralleled by a similar sensitivity regarding the shofar. Verbally formulated prayer must be synthesized with a second type of prayer, that which emerges from the sound of the shofar. As a result, there are a number of close parallels between the mitzvah of shofar and the mitzvah of prayer. And we're not going to develop those now because we don't have the time. But now what we're saying is that the shofar is, number one, the instrument of spirituality, but as such, it is, number two, an instrument of prayer. It's connected to prayer, it's included in prayer, but the blowing of the shofar itself is a prayer. It's a wordless prayer. It's a prayer that comes from the deepest place of the neshama, of the man de nafach mi delay nafach, a place where there are no words, way deep in our soul. And that brings us back, all the way back, to the vayitzer, to the nishmas chaim that was blown within us. That was before we had a name. Because later, Adam Rishon is going to call names for all the animals. This is pre-language. Before he gives names to the animals and to Chava, before there's even any communication in the world, we had a neficha. We had the breath of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what we tap into when we go back to the shofar. We say, Ribbono Shel Olam, we're asking you, we're davening, we're asking you, please, 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 overlook everything, the Kisei Din, all the stuff that's on the Midas HaDin Cheshbon, and just look at us as your expression, as your breath. Ma de nafach mi delay nafach. That's what we're doing when we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. And so every day when we say Elokai Netzor, Elokai Neshama in the morning, we're saying Ata nafach tabi. Today there, Ribbono Shel Olam, you blew within me. It's like a new day. It's a new Yetzira. So today I'm going to be physical, I'm going to have breakfast, I'm going to have lunch, I'm going to have dinner, I'm going to do all the things that I do physically, but I'm also going to keep in mind, I have a neshama, I have a havaya, I have a spark, a touch, a whisper of transcendence in my life, and I'm going to make that manifest today. So I hope we all have that opportunity. Have a great day.